Are you pregnant or a new mother steering parenthood? Pregnancy and birth of a baby is a life-changing event. An event which will make you happy, weepy, frustrated, joyous, and exasperated all at once. Hi, welcome to my podcast, Baby Ahoy. I'm your host, birth coach, and expert, Chitra Natarajan. I'm a birth enthusiast who loves drinking cups of chai, taking long walks in the woods, and all things interiors in equal measure. I will be talking to an interviewee every other week to discuss birthing experiences, coping with the new role of being a parent, and other valuable topics to help you navigate parenthood. This journey is bumpy, but certainly blissful. Join me from wherever you are for a fun conversation.
Knowing that as of tomorrow, you're going to have a baby. And it was at certain moments on those days, it was very overwhelming because it was like, oh my God, in 24 hours, I will have a baby in my arm. Like this belly is going to be in my arm.
It's definitely staged. I think that's what it is with a planned C-section, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's something that we don't know when it comes to the whole process of labor and birth. It is strange, but at the same time, it's also very comforting. But this is how it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. So we got into the hospital around 7 o'clock. And then it was all very weird. Because you arrive in the room and then eventually there's someone walking in to say, do you want breakfast? And I'm like, well, I'm not allowed to have breakfast. And Robin goes, oh yeah, I have a sandwich, please. So it all felt very surreal.
Right.
And then a nurse walked in and she was like, okay, so we're prepping you now. I'm like, okay. And then half an hour later, I was on the ops table and I was like, this is just so weird. It's quite interesting because you have the whole team around. And what Dr. Dollar did is he actually did his stand-up in the operation room in English.
Right.
There were only a few bits which had to be done in Dutch.
Fabulous. So you were also very present and involved.
It was amazing. Yeah. I love that because what I always said to Robin is I don't want to be in a room where I don't understand half of the conversation, especially if it's about the birth. I find that very uncomfortable because you would generally have the conversation to you might be in English, but then everything else around you might be in Dutch and you can't eardrop. And I don't like that feeling, but you have to trust them.
Is Rob fluent in Dutch? Because
he is,
yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the same because he might not listen to it or...
It's true.
It might not be as important for him, but I want to know. So it's very different.
Yeah. From all of this, what I understand is Dr. Dulo and his team sort of made sure that, you know, the both of you felt very safe and very looked after.
Definitely.
In the operation theatre.
Yeah.
That's very important. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had my epidural, which I have to say... is a weird feeling because so with a mother assisted birth they basically disinfect your underarms and that would be part of the operation site while you're behind the screen. So you sit up and you have your epidural and then you lie down and suddenly he goes, oh, I will do a test now. Just let me know if you can feel it. And I'm like, what if I feel it? What do I do then? So you have these last minute, oh my God, what happens if? And then it all went very quickly. So a mother-assisted birth takes about 7 minutes longer than a general C-section.
Right.
So we started the operation at 8. At 8:24, Alva was born. And I believe at about, so Robin went behind me and supported my shoulders so I would lift up a little bit. And then they drop the screen and my hands actually become part of it, which was the most incredible moment out of this whole birth. So then the doctor basically takes your hand. And I remember the way he explained it beforehand was, it's like you eat a burger, just hold the burger. So I kept on thinking about this burger. So he took my hands and you basically just feel, because Ava was breached, I felt her butt, back, and a bit of the leg. And then you start pulling it away from you rather than up. You pull it towards your legs, basically. And then she had to do a little, what is it, a Somerset to basically get her head up. Because that was the last bit to come out.
Right.
And then she suddenly sat on my chest.
Amazing.
And all that with the assistance of my own hand. And I would be the one who hates operation. I would never want to see blood or open wounds or anything like that. But you could really not see anything because the cut is so low down, you can't see anything. So I really got the first sight of Alva when she was fairly far high up with her butt. And it was incredible. You see suddenly her sitting on your chest and then... It was so, so amazing and overwhelming. It was such a beautiful moment. And then what we got in that hospital, which I'm not sure if every hospital does it, but we actually got a little tent on top of me and her with hot air going in.
Okay.
Which I thought was makes complete sense, obviously, because of the temperature change. But it was just also very comforting for her.
Yeah.
So she was staying on my chest. So we had skin to skin the whole time. She was, the kinder arts was next to us, had a little quick look at her, and that was it. Robin was the whole time next to us. He cut the umbilical cord. And in the meantime, the screen goes back up and they basically just do their thing on the other side of the screen. Yes. And that's so it. And
like holding the baby when they're stitching you up. Yeah.
So, and it's really, you have that time for the three of you, even though there's so many people in this operation theater, but you just don't realize there's no one else than me, Alva, and Robin. And that's all my memory.
Amazing.
It's really beautiful. And beforehand, there was one nurse who came to the operation theater and they were like, oh, do you want us to take pictures? And well, yeah, of course, please do. So eventually we managed to look, when we were back in the room, we managed to look into the phone and they took 70 to 100 pictures of the whole birth. It was incredible. You have every angle. It was so beautiful. And I absolutely love going back on those pictures because you can just, you can see it. Yes, obviously there is a lot of information you don't want to see. But at the same time, I can see which leg came out first and then how long this head was stuck in me compared to the rest of the body. But it's all those little things of, it was so beautiful.
Lovely.
I absolutely loved the birth. It was just the best thing I could have chosen for.
It's amazing.
And I'm so glad that I actually did ask that question.
Fabulous. Well done. This is exactly how it should be in terms of making those informed decisions so that you have created that experience for yourself. And what a lovely story that you can actually tell Alva when she's growing up. She's going to be so interested in this birth story. She's going to keep asking you to repeat it over and over again.
I hope so.
Mommy, did I see Kelly this way? It is all going to come to you.
Yes.
Lovely story to say. And she's so happy to see those pictures as well.
Yeah. Well, I did say a lot of times when I spoke about the birth afterwards, I don't understand that the mother-assisted birth is not the standard to have a C-section. If you're planning to have a C-section for whatever reason, because you want it or because you have to have it medically, why would that not be the standard? Why don't you make a gentle C-section the ordinary?
No, actually, most of the places, you know, do mother assisted. You know, whereas Dr. Dulo and there's one more person, they were the pioneers to actually start it in. They do, but the unfortunate thing is you can't go into a hospital and ask for an elective C-section here. So you can't plan for a C-section here, unlike any other country.
Yeah.
So they would only give you a C-section only in cases of whether the baby is breech or the baby is transverse or, you know, if you have like a, you know, placenta previa, it's all of that. So most of the times now we can actually ask for one, and you know, they try and sort of see how they can actually do their very best, you know, to make sure that, you know, the mother and the father have this sort of an experience. I should also say birthing people have this sort of an experience, so that they sort of you feel like, you know, it's complete, it's full.
Because, so I got information in regards to C-sections from the Diaconessa house beforehand.
Mm.
And there was no mother-assisted birth mentioned on there.
Mm. They, I think they don't actually go out and talk about it. I think that's what it is. I think it'll be nice to, that's one of the reasons why in my classes I always talk about, you know, think about women-centric and, you know, or gender C-section birth. If that's what it is, then if you have to prepare for that. Sometimes it becomes an emergency, you know, where they
have of course,
and it's a completely different thing. But even then, they sort of try and keep the parents involved as much as possible. But it's definitely, you know, really, really nice to hear such a lovely story in terms of, you know, how the birth can actually unfold to a point where you look at your experience and say, oh my God, this is fantastic. And this is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
And how long did you actually stay in the hospital?
We stayed for 2 days.
Right.
Which basically, well, the first day I was really just in bed, Robin was taking care of Alva, and I would have Alva on me, but whenever she would be transferred or you would have to change nappies, then Robin was really the person to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 24 hours, I started going for my first walk, which was a very strange feeling.
Right.
And then the day after that, we actually managed to leave.
Did you feel robust enough to be able to actually get up and go for a walk? Was it like a very slow walk? And did you take your time to do that?
It's a very strange feeling because I know that people feel very cold after having an epidural. But I was at some stage with 4 heated blankets on top of me and I was still shivering. So I was really cold. Alva was always under temperature. So she was wearing extra clothes and was actually spending quite a lot of time for that reason on our chest as well as Robin's, because I wasn't up to temperature yet. But then, yeah, the first full day in hospital, it was strange to go for the first walk and I was a bit worried. But then it did make me feel more comfortable. Doing your first steps. Okay. But it's just coming out of that moment of I can't feel my legs to you have to get up now. Yeah. And I think even this getting up, just sitting up after a C-section, it's difficult. Just getting out of bed.
And at what point did your temperature sort of come back to normalcy? Do you remember that?
I think it must have been around 36 hours after birth.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I mean, I wasn't shivering the whole time, but it was the first, it must have been around the first 6 hours after the birth that I was under heated blankets.
Wow.
And then slowly but surely I was able to at least just be in a under the blanket with a long trouser.
And how was it with breastfeeding in terms of, you know, initiating breastfeeding the first couple of days when you were in the hospital?
So I did in the wake-up room. And then we started trying again when we went back to our room, and it was really difficult. So Alva was fairly small. She was 49 centimeters, and she was only 3,150 grams when she was born. So she was on the smaller side as a baby. So she didn't have enough energy to suck. Well, it was more the sucking which was the problem. So she was latching on very aggressively and very powerful, which was very painful for me. But then we would latch her on with the nurse together. The nurse would leave and she would disconnect and she would just fall asleep. Oh. So it was this vicious circle of if you don't drink, you won't be able to get the energy to actually then drink more. So it was very difficult. So after 36 hours, in the middle of the night, I started pumping, extracting. And I remember there was one moment, and Robin laughs about it now, but you know when you just start having milk and it's very, very tiny amounts?
Yeah.
So I started extracting with a pump, and there was this tiny, it must have been like 3 driplets of milk. And then the nurse came and wanted to suck it out with a little with a little needle really. And then she lost it.
Oh no.
And I just looked at her and I was so upset about it. I was like, this is not possible. My baby needs this milk. And instead she's gonna get powder because you dropped the milk. Oh. And now you think like, oh, the amounts I'm pumping now. Those three triplets are not gonna make a difference.
No, but you know, you're also, you know, it's also that the whole mothering thing with prolactin that sort of kicks in. It's the prolactin.
Oh yeah, I was really upset.
I'm sure she was just like, she was mortified. Letting the new mother cry.
Yes. So yeah, I had quite a few difficulties then, and then we were trying to basically finger feed, and we've been doing that for the time in the hospital, and then we continued when we came home with finger feeding,
okay.
Which worked up until a certain stage, and mm-hmm. then I mean, you're in the hospital for 2 days, so you have different nurses. And there was one nurse she was amazing. She was great. She was basically a bit like my mum's age. It was a bit like the mother.
Yes.
The way she didn't tell you how to do it. She told you this is how you could do it.
Right.
And it was a very nice way of educating.
Very nice in terms of different options, but you know.
Yes.
With a lot of empathy.
Yes, and a lot of support. So that was really good. And then we came home and we had the first Kramzeug, which she was lovely, absolutely. But obviously they're different people and you had different opinions already in the hospital. And then you have the fifth person who's going to have a different opinion about things. And eventually you just start picking and choosing. Because it just needs to work for us and it needs to work for Alva. And then there was one day I had the Laktatsekundiger here because breastfeeding wouldn't work. And then eventually there was one day when the word bottle just would be dropped all the time. We need to move on to a bottle because we were still finger feeding and Alva must have been 7 days by then. A week old. So the amount of milk would get too much. We would basically just be feeding more or less the whole time. Then she fell asleep for half an hour and then we would be feeding again.
Yes. Yeah.
And I really didn't want to have the bottle. So because I knew it was painful for me and I wanted to give my breast rest from trying to latch on. But at the same time, I didn't want to get to the stage that I wouldn't want her to latch on anymore, which is unfortunately what happened because my body just went into, I'm scared of the pain. So I rather don't do it. And I never got over that stage again of saying, it's okay. Yeah. So by now I'm still expressing and Alva is still getting my milk, but at the same time, I know that I'm not having enough milk to just be able to feed her with that. So she gets a mix.
Perfect. Yeah. Yeah.
But it was one day, and I remember that, where it was my midwife coming, and then it was someone else we were talking to, and we were talking to the Kramzeug, and everyone was saying, oh, you need to change to a bottle. You need to come to the bottle, and you need to give her a bottle now. And I just looked at Robin. I'm like, kick them all out. I don't want to see them anymore. Get rid of them. I don't want to hear the word bottle anymore because I'm going to go crazy. And yes, it was probably the right decision, but I think it was the way it was communicated.
I think so.
That I just said, I don't want to hear it anymore. I understand where you're coming from, but give me a solution. Give me a different option than just saying she has to go to a bottle.
Yeah.
There must be a different solution.
I get it. Because, you know, what happens is that you're producing the prolactin and your milk is coming through and you're trying to see how you can actually put the baby on, you know, to latch.
Yeah.
So you understand the logic behind what they're trying to say because, you know, she's too small or whatever. And she's having difficulties to sort of suckle and all that. But on the other hand, you being the mother with this embracing hormone coming through, you're saying that, but I'm not going to give up. I'm going to go ahead and do this.
Yes.
Why am I not able to do it? So emotionally, you were probably not ready to sort of listen to that. And it can be extremely demotivating and it can be extremely, it can lower your senses of being a mother.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
I had a very similar experience with Vani as well. So I completely empathize with you.
And it was very difficult. Yeah, it's very difficult to just hear that. Yes.
It is. In a way, the way they would sort of say it as well, at least that's what happened with me, where they're like, but you're not able to breastfeed.
Yeah.
You need to actually do the bottle.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, my milk is coming through. I don't know why I'm not able to breastfeed. So can you not give me more solution? Can I do something else?
Yeah.
Instead of you telling me that I'm not able to, but I am making milk, but why is it that she's not able to latch on? Can you help me with something else?
Yeah.
You know, so it's definitely the language around it, you know. It sort of made me feel like I am not doing my best to feed her. I am not the mother.
I think it's that. And it was, I mean, the Kramsorg always said, oh, you just try. And I said, that's fine. But if I'm scared of something, then it's very difficult. I'm not going to get to that stage. And that's just me, my personality. I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to go for something which is going to hurt me now.
Exactly. It's not going to work because your receptors in your body are telling you it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
You know? So why do you want to try that? So I'd rather do something else. As much as I know that this is probably the right thing to do, but I don't.
Yeah.
I have the apprehension. So I completely understand.
Yeah. Which was, I mean, at the end of the day, it was much more relaxed for me because so whenever Ava would wake up in the middle of the night, and I mean, obviously I had to extract and Robin would just go and sit and feed Ava and I would extract at the same time. So we had a lot of time together as a family and then we would catch up on sleep together and then wake up again. So we were also very lucky because Ava just wouldn't wake up that many times.
Great.
To be fair, fairly quickly. She had a fairly regulated sleep at night. But it was, yeah, that was a difficult time. And it was funny because I remember we in the access group obviously spoke about breastfeeding. And I was like, I'm scared as hell for the birth and that pain.
Yeah.
Breastfeeding. Don't worry about it. I'll manage.
Sure.
Not thinking that there would be that many problems appearing. And even though it's such a natural process, it should be, right?
Right. Breastfeeding is the most challenging part of, you know, postpartum. And suddenly you have to care for this baby. And then there's this whole breastfeeding, your breast milk is actually coming through. And then you're like, oh my God, what is this? And you also sort of feel touched out because you're trying to sort of put the baby on your breast all the time.
Yeah.
It's not something that you're used to.
Yeah.
You know, it changes your relationship with your body as well a little bit. I found it that way because, you know, if you consider breast, you know, it's the most intimate, you know, it's used for intimacy. And suddenly there's this person, you know, as much as she came from me, but it was also this constant, you know, latching on. And then, you know, I would have the sore nipples and cracked nipples. It was painful and she couldn't latch on and she was agitated and I was frustrated. And, you know, it was all of that. And I completely understand how it must have been for you.
Yeah. I felt as a mother almost like I'm not good enough because I'm unable to do that. I'm unable to actually give my child milk via the breast, which was then even worse because I wouldn't be able to feed her because every time I would wake up, I would be extracting, seeing her with Robin. So that was a really difficult time because I was like, that's my bonding time. That's supposed to be the time when I'm supposed to bond with her, especially at the very beginning, which now looking back at it, I love that Alva technically sees no difference between Robin and myself.
Perfect.
For her, we are the same people. There is no mother father. There is no standard father of less attachment from her side because technically Robin fed her much more than I did.
Right.
So, and it's amazing because you can just leave her with Robin and she's like, okay, fine. I'm with Dad then. I don't mind.
Because it's the mother's guilt that comes from within. And it's also the societal pressure of how it should be with breastfeeding. I always say this, breastfeeding is the most challenging part of postpartum and your parenthood. And we always have to look at the mother's mental health.
Yeah.
How is she feeling? How is she doing? You know, if she's craving for that, an extra hour of sleep where instead of actually breast pumping, if she can sleep, she needs to get that.
Yeah.
You know? And I really wish that more people would actually talk more and more about this, so that there's more awareness, because we always sort of say breastfeeding is the best and it's the best thing that you can do, and it's free and it's easy. And as much as it's free and it's easy and, you know, compelling, there's also the other side where it
doesn't
is
always work.
Extremely challenging.
Yeah.
And you need to be open about it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, now starting to talk to other mothers and how it works, I think I now heard more stories that it didn't work than that it actually worked. And then also what I find in the Netherlands a lot is that women give up because they say after 6 weeks, I kind of have to stop anyway. What's the point of me even putting so much pressure into it of trying? And then after 6 weeks, I need to stop producing milk because I need to go back to my job after 3 months full time.
Right. They say that 33% of the mothers only continue to breastfeed for a long period of time.
Yeah.
The rest of the girls basically just stop at some point because it's either about, you know, transitioning back to work, or, you know, the employer is not providing them the space to be able to breast pump. It's a transition from, you know, pumping and feeding the baby with the bottle. And it's all of that. So it just changes. We don't actually give the parents the conducive environment to be able to do this. And then we expect them to sort of say, let's feed the baby. Let's do breastfeeding.
Yeah.
It's going to be possible. And also, I think in those days, if you, you know, I remember having this conversation with my mother because she breastfed me and also my brother. And for me, that was a bit of a letdown because I saw my brother actually breastfeed for about 2.5 years. So for me, when I was pregnant, I just said, well, my mom did it, so why can't I?
Of course.
I struggled. Yeah. And I had this, you know, unbearable guilt of, you know, not being able to actually feed her properly, and then topping up with formula, stopping formula, doing skin to skin. Still managed to feed her for 9 months. And when I spoke to my mom, unfortunately, she couldn't help me because for her, breastfeeding went really well, especially with my mother.
Yeah.
And I also had a bit of grief about it, you know, saying that she could do it and I couldn't. My poor mom.
it was,
she really didn't know how to handle me because I was getting really annoyed with her, saying that, but can you not tell me, you know, there must be a way. She was like, I'm really, really sorry. I really don't know, because it just went so well for me. It was the easiest thing that I could do. And then I started blaming myself, saying that then why is it that I'm not able to do it? It's that pressure.
But I think that's what it is. It's the pressure. For me, that was slightly different. I think it was more the fact of the pressure of why are you not latching her on again?
Yeah.
And while I really didn't have that from Robin was very supportive and he said, if it's painful, you don't do it, full stop.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. We'll feed her some different way, so it's fine. But with my mum, that was very different because she was able to breastfeed.
Yeah.
So she was like, oh no, but you have to try. And have you tried today? And have you done this?
Gosh.
And like, this does not help me.
No.
And then, so eventually she got to the stage that she said, okay, extracting is accepted. More or less. But then it started with, oh, so how is your milk production going? And I just said, no, yes. And I just said, no, this is enough. Because I can see very quickly if I'm under stress, my milk production goes down immediately.
Yeah, because your adrenaline takes over, your cortisol takes over, and then it's just your body is not producing enough milk. You know, you really need to sort of be in that zen stress-free zone for things to happen. Oh, absolutely. The same thing, it's very funny that, you know, just as what you said, that Robin basically said, don't worry about it, if it's too painful, you're not doing it. Anand said the same thing to me, saying that if it's too painful, it's not working out, this formula, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
And you know what happened? I had a huge meltdown saying that
I
am producing enough. You don't understand.
Yes. Poor man, right?
I thought I was being supportive. I was like, but you don't understand.
Yes.
Maybe something's wrong with me. But still producing milk. You know, it was just this, the whole back and forth, you know, that. But I completely understand. I completely get you. But I'm really glad that, you know, you've sort of done this. And how old is Alva now?
She's almost 6 months now.
And it's going really well. Everything is fine. You're still pumping and extracting. And
Yes.
As a new parent, if there are a few things that I would actually tell the expecting parents, you know, when they're preparing for all sorts of birth and also for postpartum, any tips or tricks that you would actually sort of say, just say, okay, be prepared for these things, or just look into these things, what would be your, you know, three inputs?
I think the best thing is to ask all the questions you have. And I remember when I started at Access, I felt like there were a lot of stupid questions. And at the very beginning, I would just write down words you mentioned and then Google them afterwards. And I was like, what's the point of this? Let's just be an adult and let's just ask in the group. Yes. But then at the same time, it's group pressure and you don't want to question because you don't want to be the stupid person within the room. And I just felt like, no, this is a safe space. We are all in a very similar position. Just ask all the questions you have. I mean, I remember Robin and me, we would come out of appointments from the midwife, and like half an hour later, we would be like, oh my God, but we didn't ask this. What happens if that? And so we would just start WhatsApping each other to be like, questions for the midwife next time.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's very important for you to write things down.
Yes.
And also, if you're doing this, you know, any sort of this comprehensive childbirth course, I mean, that is my role as a birth professional, to be able to give you all those information that you really need. And that's why I always say, in my class, saying that please ask any question. There is nothing as a stupid question, because you're doing this for the first time. And if I don't have an answer, sometimes I might not, and I'll be able to actually check and come back to you. But most of the times I will tell you what it is, you know. Yeah. So yeah. And I really like the fact that both you and Rob would, you know, always ask questions to make sure that, you know, even otherwise, if others were like sort of, you know, hesitating to think about, should I be actually asking anything, they would be like, can I actually ask another question? I really like that, you know. And it's also very reassuring for me, especially when I'm actually teaching online, for me to know that people are actually getting that information and they're actually asking me questions. And it sort of energizes me when people actually ask questions. So I'm really glad that the both of you did.
Yeah. I think one tip, and I, enjoying is the wrong word, but to prepare myself for the natural birth of knowing what I want and what I don't want to have, is watching the worst video you can find. And basically just pick out what you don't want to have and show it to your partner. Make sure your partner or your birth companion is part of that journey you go through.
You know, watch one bad birth video and like, I don't want that. Can we prepare ourselves for a better outcome?
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, it did work for me. I thought that was, but also because we obviously spoke about a lot of things, and the birth like a feminist explains a lot of things. But if you actually, after that book, if you start watching these videos, it's like, this is number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is all what I don't want to have. So that was a very clear no, never, ever. And I think number 3 is just really enjoy your pregnancy. Because I think with everything we've been through the last year, and at some stage we had my pregnancy notes from my midwife in my hand. So we started reading through them. And it was basically every time they noted something down, Julia was in tears in their office because of whatever. Insurance didn't work, a grandparent died, then another grandparent died, and it was just one after another. And I was like, I lost my pregnancy. I absolutely did. If I could do it again, maybe don't do the house move at the same time.
You actually moved to a different country. You moved to an apartment and then you moved to another house.
Yes.
You were preparing yourself for, you wanted a C-section to preparing yourself for a normal unmedicated vaginal birth, to finding out the baby was in breach, to planning for a C-section. My God, and the struggles with breastfeeding. You've gone through a lot, you know, Julia. Yes. And if you look at the, you know, notes and you sort of feel like, and losing grandparents, you actually wanted to be closer to your family in Germany, and to lose them one after the other, just when you were actually moving here, it's quite a blow. You know, you've gone through a lot. So give yourself a lot of time and space and appreciation for going through all of that with such a positive outlook.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You did it really, really well. So you should be very, very proud of yourself.
Well, and I think, I mean, like I said, I loved my pregnancy. It was absolutely amazing. And I was very lucky because I hardly had any issues. And now looking at Alva is just, that's the best thing. I created her. It's still this little weird feeling of, you know, before, obviously, pregnancy, you turn pregnant and you have a child afterwards. But now looking at her is such a different thing of, you grew in me. This is mind-blowing. It's really nice. And to be honest, I created a book of her birth with all these pictures they've been taking in the operation theater. And we have this most amazing text. So whoever comes to this house and wants to see it, obviously there's a lot of blood to see as well. So it does have a, be careful if you want to open this book.
Namelessly invite myself to come.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Please do. Because I absolutely love it. And I just sit down sometimes and just look through the book because I so enjoyed my birth. And I'm so glad that I could and that I got the chance to share this, because I couldn't imagine that it could have been in any other way better than what it was.
Amazing. Amazing. On that note, I really have to thank you for taking your time to share everything, right from your family to moving, and to sort of share what an amazing experience you've had. As much as it went the other way, wanted, you still made it your own. And I'm really, really glad that you've actually opened up to a wider audience for people to be able to, you know, listen to this story. So I really have to thank you. So thank you very, 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 very much.
Thank you for having me. It was great to be here.
Thank you to all of you, my lovely listeners, for tuning into my podcast. I hope you found this episode informative. If you really like my podcast, then please do subscribe for more such episodes. Please feel free to share the podcast with your family and friends. And this will help others know that this podcast exists. Thank you once again, and see you all next time.